Welcome to the HealthLinks podcast, presented by the HealthLinks family of services. I'm DJ Thatcher, and I have the honor of being your host for these conversations in which we engage with people regarding the health and medical landscape of South Carolina. Remember, our podcasts are also video-based, so you can, number one, see our guests, but also any pictures or video that we might have as well that we allude to during the podcast. Today's episode is something that is striking, it seems, a larger number of people and families as time goes on, and that's all about Alzheimer's disease. We have with us today the Vice President of Communications for the Alzheimer's Association of South Carolina, Beth Sulkowski. Beth, hi, welcome to the HealthLinks podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, Beth, first of all, so many people, it seems, are talking about Alzheimer's disease or dementia, memory loss. We see people talking about it right now related to politicians from, you know, from both parties who they're questioning their mental capacity. What exactly is Alzheimer's disease?
Sure. Well, Alzheimer's disease is something you hear joked about a lot. A lot of people associate it with getting older, and it is most common at age 65 and older, but this is a disease that can actually strike even younger in a person's 40s or 50s. That's younger onset Alzheimer's, but essentially it is the most common cause of dementia. Dementia is a word that is more of an umbrella term for a set of symptoms of cognitive loss that is severe enough to cause difficulties in daily life. So that could be memory, but it can also be word finding and other things that your brain controls. So the symptoms can vary, be a lot broader than people a lot of times think. A lot of people just think about forgetting names or forgetting your keys. But it is much more wide range than that. And when someone has Alzheimer's disease, there is a progression. So in the very early stages, people are very highly functioning. Some people might even still be working, may still be driving very safely. And that is the benefit of early detection, to put supports in place to allow people to live independently for as long as possible, and to take advantage of treatments that might be available. As the disease progresses, that individual and their family is going to need more support. And so that's a lot of what the Alzheimer's Association is here for, to provide information about the disease, about caregiving challenges, and resources that can help support families who are facing Alzheimer's or any type of dementia.
Sure. And let's go deeper into that as well, because obviously the Alzheimer's Association, wonderful organization. Of course, we have the American Heart Association, American Lung Association, American Diabetes Associations. What does your association, and maybe some of these others as well, really do on a day-to-day basis to help with this condition?
The Alzheimer's Association, our mission is really dual-fold. We're focused on fighting Alzheimer's on many fronts. So the first thing I want to say offhand, a lot of people think research when they think Alzheimer's Association, and that is correct. We are the largest nonprofit funder of Alzheimer's and dementia research globally. So that's millions every year that we are directly funding international research grants on pretty much every continent, funding some of the most innovative science out there and convening scientists every year at our international conference. However, the flip side of that coin is the work that we do through our local chapters, like the South Carolina chapter, mm-hmm. to provide resources and support in our community. So that is happening through the form of educational programs that we have both in our communities and online and through virtual formats, as well as support groups for caregivers, again, in multiple formats, whether in person or virtually. And we even have some really great early stage programming in different areas of the state for people who might have been diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment or the earliest stages of Alzheimer's and are looking to connect with people who are facing a similar journey, because it can be very isolating. And we want to make sure that individuals who are facing this don't feel alone. So those are some of the things right off the bat. The thing that people can access no matter what is a 24-hour helpline. It is totally free. There's a master's level social worker on the other end of that phone. Holiday, middle of the night, doesn't matter. They're there to pick up, answer your questions, ranging from the warning signs to caregiving challenges to finding resources that you might need in your community.
Wow, what a tremendous resource. And what a mission as well, from research to right here at the local level that we can see. How big is your chapter here in South Carolina? Pretty large staff or pretty small?
We are a small but mighty team. I think we're about 13 people statewide. Okay. We currently have 3 office locations, but we really focus on being out in the community more so than sitting in our offices and doing work there, getting out. We rely on a lot of volunteers to help us deliver our mission, ranging from community educators who are trained by the Alzheimer's Association to deliver particular programs. Again, we have trained support group facilitators, and all types of volunteer roles that help us maximize the care and support that we can offer to our residents of South Carolina.
That's terrific. And we have a statewide audience, so this hits home no matter what corner of South Carolina we're in. That's good. So, hey, real quick, just tell us about Beth and how Beth got involved with this. What's your passion?
Sure. Well, when I graduated from college, I was really looking to work in a field that would have a strong purpose and mission to get me up out of bed every morning. So nonprofit was where I was always headed. I had an interest in Alzheimer's specifically because I lost my great-grandfather to the disease when I was quite young, probably about 12. He lived in another state, so I didn't see it up close and personal, but I remember hearing my grandmother and my dad and his brothers figuring out how to take care of him once my great-grandmother had passed away, because his symptoms were kind of hidden. He was protected by my great-grandmother, kind of covered for him. So when she passed away, it was like, wow, what do we do? And a lot of families find themselves in that kind of crisis situation. So I was fortunate enough to come on board with the chapter and a program assistant role, helping with the support groups and the education programs and everything. But my background is in English, and so I moved into a communications role. So I have been very lucky to grow along with the chapter over the years, and October will mark 17 years that I have been working in this field.
Wow.
It has become my career, and you know, I am honored to be able to spend my time fighting a disease that impacts so many people. I truly didn't realize the impact of it until I started working in this field, and you know, meeting people who are in their mid-50s, you know, those years where you're supposed to be able to sit back and enjoy, you know, the life that you've built themselves, to see them facing a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, which I'd only experienced in my grandfather in his 90s. It was very eye-opening to me. And it made me realize, no, this is not normal aging. This is a disease that needs to be fought, and who is fighting it. So I am proud to be one of many people who's involved in that fight.
Well, what a remarkable career. And again, it's not a job, it's a passion. You can certainly tell that. So, yeah. So going back to that, you mentioned a moment ago about 50-year-olds. What about those? Just like your family, ours has been affected by this with family members. We have a lot who are on the younger side now, and they're wondering, hey, what should I be watching for? Or what should I be doing at a young age? You know, things to avoid, or is there something I could do to help maybe stave off this disease? So what are some things to watch for?
That's a great point. So something that all listeners can take away from this, whether they are impacted now or not, is there are risk factors that we can impact through choices that we make. So we can't change our age. We can't change our genetics, but we can make healthy lifestyle choices. So we all know what is good for our heart. Many of those same things are also good for your brain. So getting your blood moving through aerobic exercise, eating a healthy diet, the Mediterranean and the Mediterranean DASH diets are two that have really been linked to good outcomes in brain health. Getting enough sleep, wearing a helmet when you ride your bike, all of these things kind of build up, continuing to learn throughout your life. So whether that's learning a new language or making sure that you challenge yourself, you know, with, you know, a lot of people like to do a daily crossword. I'm one of them, just to keep your mind, doing things that are different.
So that really does help. It's not a marketing ploy by all the people who are giving us these games and these apps.
Works. I mean, we don't endorse any one type of game or app, but challenging your mind and continuing to learn. And even in the form of formal education, there have been studies that show that the higher your education level it is the more protective it is to your brain to the cognitive loss that can occur with Alzheimer's disease, because you have those cognitive reserves. Even things like staying socially active help reduce the risk of dementia. Isolation can really be detrimental in many ways. And so we like to say, if you can find something that checks a lot of the boxes, so if you go with some friends to learn a new exercise that you have to think about doing, like that Zumba class or what have you, those are some things that are going to have multiple benefits for your brain health. We have a whole online course on demand called Healthy Living for Your Brain and Body. It's totally free. You can go to alz.org and get all the details on what the research shows can help reduce your risk for dementia.
It's very well done, by the way, as an endorsement. So yeah, do check out the website. Lots of great information there.
So, you
mentioned a moment ago about wearing a helmet. As we produce this podcast, football season has kicked off, and this has been something that's been in the news at least the last several years about people with, former head injuries or concussions and things like that. Is there a higher incidence of this type of illness with people who've had head injuries?
There is definitely a correlation between head injury, multiple concussions over a person's life, and developing dementia. There's still a lot that we need to learn about it. But I can tell you, even people that I've known, one of our early onset individuals who developed dementia early in her life, she was a horseback rider, and she had multiple falls and serious concussions in the younger part of her life, which her doctors feel have contributed to some of what she has going on now. So, you know, definitely take the measures where you can to protect your brain. Wearing your bike helmet, and even wearing your seatbelt, being as careful as you can. You know, there's precious cargo in here. You got to take care of that.
Exactly. Yeah. They cannot be replaced for sure. So as we think about subgroups of people, are there like other illnesses, subgroups of people who are more prone to developing Alzheimer's besides obviously as we get older, but I mean, whether it's race or gender or anything else?
Sure. Well, the first thing I'd like to mention is if you have, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, especially if they are not well controlled, those are contributing factors for developing dementia. So if you have any of that going on, you want to watch your numbers, keep those health conditions in control as much as you can. Again, there's that connection between the health of your heart and the health of your brain, and making sure we're not doing anything to impair the blood flow and oxygen to the brain. However, there are segments of the population that are more at risk for developing Alzheimer's, including African Americans and Hispanic Latinos. These individuals have a statistically higher risk of developing Alzheimer's and other dementias compared to just white Americans. Definitely drives the work of the Alzheimer's Association, realizing that we have these at-risk populations, but also populations who have been historically underserved. It's increasingly important that we get the word out into these communities, not only about the risk factors, but about the warning signs, and, encouraging a trusting relationship with your healthcare provider to be able to discuss these symptoms when they start to arise, and to know what your treatment options are and what the support systems are, not only in your family or in your community, but also through the Alzheimer's Association and other organizations that exist in this care space, knowing your resources so that they are close at hand when you need them.
Sure. And regardless of our age, what are some of those early warning signs we should watch for? Things that might tip us off that this is not just a simple forgetting something, but maybe I have an issue.
Sure. So, of course, there's the forgetting. The short-term memory seems to be impacted the most, but confusion with time or place is one that you might not expect. To getting confused about the day of the week, but not figuring it out. I certainly have days during the week I'm like, what day is it again? But I figure it out eventually.
Oh, life.
Yeah, you look at your calendar and you figure out where you are. Also, trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships. As we age, you might start noticing some dings on the car, like, how did that get there? What happened here? Those kind of changes can happen with cataracts, but it could be something that comes into play if you're looking at possible dementia. Definitely new problems with words, whether in speaking or writing. Word finding can be very challenging for people who are in the early stages of dementia. A lot of our younger onset individuals actually are they lose their confidence in their speaking because it's more difficult to take what is in their mind and get it to come out their mouth the way that they intend. Okay. Misplacing things and losing your ability to retrace those steps. So, you know, we all lose things from time to time. We eventually find it. But if you are not able to kind of think through, okay, where might this be and locate it, that might be a red flag. And then, you know, trouble doing things that are very routine. So for an example might be driving to work or driving to the grocery store in a community where you've lived for many years. That is actually a real life red flag that we hear a lot of times from family, getting lost while driving. Big red flag. Withdrawing socially. Again, that loss of confidence, it might point to changes that are happening and even changes in mood and personality. I want to add here, though, that there are some other things such as clinical depression that can cause some of these symptoms as well. And that's one of the reasons that you want to talk to your healthcare professional as soon as you start noticing these, because if there are other things going on that can be treated or reversed, absolutely make sure you take care of that. But if it is Alzheimer's disease, the most recent treatments that are now available for the disease are only helpful in the very earliest stages. So that's another reason that you want to get an early and accurate diagnosis.
Sure. Let's talk about some of those. So let's assume that we are diagnosed. We've gone through that whole medical workup. What is some of that cutting edge therapy that's available?
The newest treatment that is received traditional approval by the FDA, which means it is now covered by Medicare. So that's a big one. It's actually an infusion. So it you would go into the doctor's office every couple of weeks, you would get an IV treatment. And this treatment is called Leqembi. It works to remove an accumulation of proteins in the brain that are there. We call them amyloid plaques. And it's like sticky, gunky stuff that is in between your brain cells. That is a hallmark of this disease. Science, there's a lot of discussion and debate in the scientific community. Is this a side effect of the disease or is this causing it? And so this drug actually goes in and removes those deposits of the sticky protein in order to improve cognitive function and slow the rate of cognitive decline. And clinical trials have shown that it does slow the rate of cognitive decline for those with an Alzheimer's type dementia for many months. And some other drugs that have not yet been approved, but are in clinical trials now are showing an even longer period of time, maybe up to a year that people have. And that's a small amount of time. But when you're talking about cognitive function and your good days that you have with family members to do the things you love, to make new memories, and to just enjoy your life, that is priceless time. And so we really encourage, again, people to be proactive in their healthcare, to not shy away from having those difficult conversations with their family physicians. And if for some reason your physician's like, oh no, you know, that's normal this age, you know, if they don't take you seriously and you feel that it needs to be taken seriously, it's up to you to push the issue and say, can you refer me to someone? I would like to be evaluated. You really need to be your own advocate in the healthcare space.
It, with any medical issue, right?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So what else does the Alzheimer's Association provide as far as support? You've talked a lot about that. What are some of those specific things?
The education programs are huge. These are available, as I mentioned, in person. We around the state are offering in-person programs, but the on-demand classes online, I think, are a huge resource that are underutilized because you can go on and sit down and get the full benefit of a 1-hour breakdown of the 10 warning signs. What is different from normal aging? When should you be concerned? What to take to the doctor when you have concerns? Really good in-depth programs that give you that information that you need in a really short format. You can get those at ALZ.org. And then the caregiver support groups are just a wonderful resource. It can be very isolating when you're caring for a family member, particularly if you're doing it by yourself and it's 24/7, you don't have any help around. Some of these support groups, as I mentioned, meet virtually. So even if you can't get away from the home, you can access this support. And the Alzheimer's Association South Carolina chapter specifically has a pot of money set aside to help caregivers attend programs whether education programs or support groups, in order to hire in-home care to stay with a loved one if they can't otherwise get away. Mm-hmm. And that's a free resource. You can request the application for that sitter service by calling our helpline. And that 24/7 helpline is 800-272-3900.
All right. Terrific. And we'll make sure we have that on the graphic here as well. Yeah, that in-home care is so vital, I'm sure, because that familiarity with being at home and so forth. Mm-hmm. We're blessed here also in South Carolina with a lot of facilities, whether it might be assisted living or memory care or other types of facilities. And so I guess you can work with families once they find the need to use one of those services as well.
That's right. We can help point to options in the community. Another resource that is available, actually funded by the state of South Carolina, is an Alzheimer's and dementia caregiver respite program. So this is something that you can actually get to through your local area agency on aging to request an application for short-term funds to, again, help pay for care assistance. And that can be in the home with in-home care. It can be in an adult day center setting if that's available in your area. And it can even be a short-term stay and like an assisted living. So if you need to go somewhere for the weekend and there is, you know, no one who can stay and be that caregiver, or you just need a weekend to yourself. You've been doing this for 2 years. You are burnt out. You need some time for yourself as a person and not just as a caregiver. This respite program, the whole idea is to help restore caregivers and keep them healthy so that they can continue to provide that important care as a family member.
That's such a huge issue, because this is not just a disease for that one person. It's the entire family or support team that's dealing with this. So
absolutely. There's such a ripple effect with any type of dementia because of just the care needs and, you know, the challenges with communication, even changes in personality. It becomes a change in relationship. So a parent-child relationship all of a sudden has all of these dynamics that you haven't had before. And it's challenging, especially as a person progresses in the illness and isn't able to do all the things they were before, but wants to be independent. They might object to some of the help that they're getting to family members. And those are all situations that we can help family members talk through. Again, I point to that 24-hour helpline to get advice on, you know, the family dynamics, not just the symptoms and the caregiving, but how to navigate conversations, especially with the person who's living with dementia. We have a couple of courses online that are specifically about that.
Well, obviously, the Alzheimer's Association is doing a phenomenal job, the South Carolina chapter in particular. But this all costs some money, right? So how do you go about getting funding, and how can maybe our listeners help?
Our biggest event of the year is Walk to End Alzheimer's, and this is a nationwide signature event. It takes place in over 600 communities all across the country. Here in South Carolina, we have 9 Walk to End Alzheimer's locations, including in Charleston, October 28th. They're all throughout the fall. Our first one is actually in Rock Hill in September, towards the end of September. Greenville's in September as well. But the bottom line is, Walk to End Alzheimer's is about fighting for a different future. We are walking for the families who are impacted today. We are walking for more time with them. We are walking for more treatments. And we're also walking to honor the people in our lives who have been impacted. So it is a casual, usually about 2-mile walk in the community where each walk is. But my favorite part of the event is actually before the walk begins. And you see these brightly colored flowers behind me. Part of our opening ceremony, we have what we call the Promise Garden. And every registered participant gets to take home one of these flowers. Wow. The colors are symbolic of a person's reason for walking. So if I chose the yellow flower, I would be someone who's currently caring or loving someone who's living with dementia. The purple is for someone who's lost someone to this disease. Blue is for someone who is currently living with a diagnosis. And we also have an orange flower for people who might not have a close personal connection, but just support the vision of a world without Alzheimer's. Beautiful. During the ceremony, we tell the story of people, you know, from each of these colors, their story. And then everyone in the crowd holds up their flower in solidarity. And so you look across and you see the sea of brightly colored flowers. They're wow. spinning in the wind. And you just, it's really, it brings a community together to realize we have all been touched by this and we are all fighting back to change this for each other and for the future. So it's very wow. uplifting. You might not yeah. expect that from a cause that can be as sad as this, but it's very uplifting and motivating and forward-thinking, just reaffirming our commitment to change the course of this disease.
Well, it's helping the organization. It's helping with research and with the support that you give. And also, it's addressing some of those issues you said that we should engage in, you know, get some exercise, get some social yes. interaction. So yeah, a lot
exactly.
of
exactly. Yeah, check all the boxes. that physical activity, the social interaction, learning new things potentially. Sure. So you can do it for your brain, you can do it for research, you can do it for someone you love. People have all kinds of reasons that they walk, which is part of why we do the Promise Garden. So we can honor everyone's reason. And it is free to register. Of course, it is a fundraiser. So we encourage fundraising or donating. Everyone who raises $100 will get the t-shirt. We actually mail that directly to you in your mailbox. But everyone who registers, whether or not you are able to donate or fundraise, will take one of these guys home with you that you can put out in your, wow. your yard and watch it spin and make you think of that special day even beyond the walk. But you can find the walk closest to you at alz.org/walk. You can just put in your zip code and it'll pull it right up. And we would welcome you anywhere in South Carolina or beyond. You know, yeah. come out and walk with us for an impactful morning and a way to move the cause forward.
alz.org. And also give us that hotline number one more time, Beth, for people who
yes.
might want to call any hour of the day or night just to get information.
Yes, that free 24/7 helpline is 800-272-3900. Again, that's a master's level social worker who's going to be helping you anytime, day or night.
All right. Beth Sokalski from the Alzheimer's Association of South Carolina, thank you so much for joining us here on the Health Links podcast. And we wish you much success with the walk coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember, our podcasts are also video-based, and so you can log in and not only hear our guests, but of course, see some of the pictures and video that go along with the subject as well. And as always, for any questions about our guest or for any comments or maybe suggestions for future podcasts, reach out to us at listen@healthlinkspodcast.com. I'm DJ Thatcher. Thank you for joining.